So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Switching gears a little bit now, and from storytelling, we're going to go to the individual words. The Dictionary of American Regional English is finished, and it is a lot of, it's a wonderful, wonderful resource for us. Joan Hall, Chief Editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, back once again to be with us. I'm great to have her back as we talk about the dictionary and also celebrate the completion of that fifth and final volume. She brought all five volumes with her today, and you have to be pretty strong just to carry all those, Joan.
30 pounds worth of words.
30 pounds worth of words. Well, I'll tell you what, you may have a question or comment. Maybe there's a word or a set of words that you wonder about, or maybe you just have a question about the dictionary itself and how it was compiled. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would love to hear from you. What an achievement to finally have that finished.
Well, thank you very much. You know that for years, Fred Cassidy's mantra was, on to Z. And now we have reached Z, but we're not finished.
Yeah, no. Tell us what's happening.
Well, we need to have a new mantra, so we have adopted with Dr. Seuss, on beyond zebra. We've reached the letter Z, but we are now in the process of proofreading of sixth volume of supplementary data, which will come out a year from now. And that's going to be a marvelous research tool and a wonderful browsing tool. So now, if you want to know all the synonyms for a sub sandwich, and you want to see the maps for hero, hoagie, sub, grinder, Cuban, torpedo, spucky, wedgie, and all the rest, you have to flip through the five volumes. But in this new volume, we will have the maps laid out on facing pages so you can see these regional distributions at a glance.
Oh, man. And there, I mean, as we think about it, the English does vary quite a bit from one region to the next, doesn't it?
Oh, it still does. People like to think that language is becoming homogenized, but I don't believe that's true. Yes, language changes, and some words get pushed out by national words, but there's still a tremendous amount of variety.
And not only do you have the print, but you've got Twitter going here, and for one thing, you got a daily word. Do you not on Twitter?
Yes, @DareWords is the word a day from Dare.
@DareWords, okay, and then you'll sometimes people will sometimes respond to quick questions that people might have?
Yes, and we keep track of the responses, so if it's something that we'd like to include in the electronic edition, we'll have the data available. And we're very eager to get started on that. Harvard University Press promises us that it will be available in September of 2013.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Joby in Ingleside, Illinois, has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Joby. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, just real quick, because I know you guys are probably busy. I have two phrases that two different grandmothers used to say, and I'm curious as to know whether it's a familial thing or if it's a regional thing that made them say these things. Anyway, one is my husband's grandmother. She is from Illinois, but she did a lot of growing up in Michigan. She also lived in Florida a little bit. But anyway, she, being discreet, whenever she felt that she needed to use the ladies' room, would say something like, I need to see a man about a dog.
Yeah.
And the other one is my other grandmother, who is 100% Italian from Chicago. She says, instead of you, she says use.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, neither one was using just a family expression.
Oh, okay.
To see a man about a dog is pretty widespread. I would have said that it was more common among men than among women, mm-hmm. but it's not unheard of for a woman to say it.
I had heard it, want to see a man about a horse.
Oh.
That was something that was in my neighborhood, in not far from Madison, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Both are if not current, were at one time current.
Yeah.
Well, I had never heard anybody say it before, and I thought, okay, she's a little bit nutty, you know. But so
she may have been nutty, but this was not a nutty part of her speech.
Wasn't a nutty part of the family. And my other grandmother, just the use, is that just a Chicago?
No, that's a very Midland expression.
Oh.
It starts further east in Pennsylvania, goes through West Virginia and in a westward band, and it's just one of many plural pronouns. In this fifth volume that just came out, we have a wide array from all the you all and you allses and you uns and yous guyses and yins and things like that. Yous is just folk plural of you, because English doesn't distinguish between singular and plural you. So some people make it regular, and that's a very logical thing to do, but it's not used everywhere.
Okay. I was just curious. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And we don't know really how see a man about a dog or see a man about a horse, how that ever came into being.
Oh, I think it's just a way of not having to say what you really mean.
I think you are right. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, visiting with Joan Hall today, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. Great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. This the DARE Project, boy, five volumes, and these are thick volumes. It started a long time ago.
Yes, it did. We started, the actual planning started in 1962, but the field work, where we went to 1,002 communities across the country, took place between 1965 and 70. And we have maps showing the words that we collected then, if they are regional. And people ask, well, if the field work was done so long ago, isn't this completely dated? Well, no, because it's a historical dictionary, and we like to show the very earliest instance of every word, enough others to show the chronological and geographic range, and then contemporary examples as well. So the book published in 2012 actually has quotations from 2011, and the 1965 to 70 fieldwork provides a really great mid-20th century snapshot of language at that time. So that's the unique part about DARE. But we also use written sources from books, magazines, newspapers, diaries, letters, anything we can get to show how words are used.
Mary in Madison has a question for you. Hello, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yes, I thought it was a family saying, but recently, a while back, I was watching a movie, and I think it was before the 20s, and they used the expression something like, I don't get the beat of it.
Yeah, I don't know how far that goes back, but it certainly is not very recent. I don't actually remember whether we
don't get the beat of it
or not. But
it's something like that.
Yeah, and it's sort of like
it beats me.
Yeah, or beat as in music.
Well,
yeah,
we do have beat meaning something that surpasses, and the quotes are, "Did you ever see the beat of that?" The earliest one we have is 1827, so it certainly has a good pedigree.
So it goes back that far and probably further.
Yes.
Now, what did you say? I don't get the.
The first quotation says, "Did you ever get? Did you ever see the beat of that?"
That's what they would say.
Yeah, so it's something that's really great. Did you ever see anything better than that?
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. It's another one I've heard many times over the years. Dick in Waukesha, hello.
Yeah, the talk hark back to the going to see a man about a horse discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard, I'm going to shake hands with the governor?
I confess that's new to me.
Oh, well, no, but I've actually heard that one, too. I've heard that one, too. Means the same thing as seeing a man about a horse. Lynn in Madison, on to you. Hi, Lynn.
Hello. I was wondering, my mom grew up in the Ohio near Pennsylvania, and she always says skosh for just a little bit of something.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little skosh. And I was wondering if that was just from that region or...
No, I don't think so. That's one word that came back after World War II when GIs had a little bit of exposure to Japanese. So I think you'll find it pretty much all over the country in people who have some kind of military background.
Huh.
Oh, okay.
So it's Japanese? It's a very ancient on a Japanese word?
I believe so.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Tommy and Madison, hi to you.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, good afternoon. Yeah. I'd like to talk about that expression, see a man about a horse.
Yeah.
I believe that is derived from Prohibition days, when in Chicago, when you wanted to bet on a horse, it was they didn't like the bookies in the bar area. So the bookie would go into the washroom, and the gentleman would go into the washroom and he'd bet on a horse, and he'd bet $100 on horse number 7 in the 8th race, and he wouldn't necessarily use the facilities; he would just use the bookie.
Oh.
Very interesting idea.
You know, that could well be. Could well be. Thank you very much for calling, Tom. And that's actually sort of a logical answer to that question about seeing a man about a horse. Could be. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Joan Hall, our guest today, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. She'll be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There are few things we take more for granted than the words and phrases that we use on a regular basis. And until someone swears that it's something different, and then the battle begins. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. There are fascinating variations of American Regional English that we'll be talking about with Joan Hall. She's the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. Did you grow up with a hot dish for dinner and pop to wash it down? Joan's here for the next half hour, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments about words you might wonder about. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. And we'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking about words today with Joan Hall, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. They went from A to Z. And the fifth and final volume is out now, and I hate to say final because there are really some other volumes coming, but we've gone A through Z, haven't we, Joan?
Yeah, we call it the final text volume.
The final text volume. Having fun talking with her about the words that we use and others use. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 with your own questions or comments. Sam, who's on the road, let's go to Sam. Hi, Sam. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks. I have a question about a word that my grandma pronounces weird. She's from Green, Iowa, and she says wash instead of wash. I was wondering, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, we've heard that one, too.
That's, excuse me, pretty common. It goes, again, in a band from east to west in Pennsylvania and going westward. And nobody knows for sure why that intrusive R is there, but it's in words like warsh and garsh and others as well. And it's a regional thing and a social thing, too, because in many places where it's often heard, sometimes it's stigmatized, and so people try not to say it even if they grew up saying it. But it's certainly widespread, and your grandmother's not alone.
Yeah, not for sure. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. Dale in Rhinelander, we're on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Bubbler and water fountain.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, Wisconsinites like to think that bubbler is their own, and it's only heard in southeastern Wisconsin, but it's not quite true. You can hear bubbler in places in Massachusetts and Ohio and Rhode Island, but the real concentration of bubblers is indeed in this area, and we've found that the places where bubbler is the normal term match very nicely to the marketing area of the Kohler Company back in about 1918.
Yeah, and those drinking fountains bubbled up. And in fact, you can still find them around if you go to the Vilas Park Zoo in Madison. There is a bubbler.
A porcelain bowl with a bubbling valve in the middle, and it just bubbles away.
There you go. Thanks, Dale. Jerry in Port Washington. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Thought I would share a little story with your guest and listeners. Several years back, we had an AFS student from Thailand. She spoke excellent English when she joined us. And I was explaining something one day, and I said, and I could tell she was puzzled. I said, "Clear as mud, huh?" And she looked at me, and I had to really go into an explanation of what I meant by that. Well, a couple of weeks later, a month later, she comes home from school all excited. "Mr. So-and-so used the term clear as mud, and I understood what he meant."
Oh, that's a great story.
That's it.
Thank you for thanks for calling, Jerry. And that's, yeah, clear as mud.
Yeah, the idioms in any language are often inexplicable to a foreigner.
Sandy in New Berlin. I like that, clear as mud. Sandy in New Berlin, hello.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, Joan.
Hello.
Hi. I have a question about the word grip. My grandmother, who would be 113 now, often used the word grip to describe her suitcase, and she used the word weasel sock to describe her purse. I wondered if this is historic, because weasel sock just seems a little too crazy for her to have made that up.
Grip, I've heard.
Yes, grip is pretty common, and we did not enter it because we didn't find any regional distribution. It's definitely old-fashioned. I remember my grandfather using the term, too. But weasel, what was the?
Weasel sock.
Weasel sock.
For
weasel sock.
For a purse.
For a purse.
Well, that's new to me.
That's a new one. Never heard that one.
I'm jotting it down.
And if anybody else has heard that, call and let us know.
And where did you say she was?
Yes, and I'll be listening.
Yeah, where was this, Sandy?
Well, she spent a lot of years in Milwaukee, but her early years were in South Dakota. She lived in La Crosse, Western Wisconsin, and that's pretty much it in terms of her localities.
Okay. All right, so we've got a few more, at least clues. Thanks, Sandy. Stay listening.
Right, and one addendum. My mother often goes off to see a man about a pink bicycle. The feminine side.
Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate it.
Do you suppose she's betting on the race?
Oh, gosh. That's wonderful. Dave in Madison. Hi.
Good afternoon. Now, my question is, when brand names become the lexicon, like I'm going to Google it, we'll use Xerox this, can I have a Kleenex? So what was the first time where it basically a company name became, quote-unquote, the word? And two, how long would it take for, like Google to basically, from start to where it might actually show up in the dictionary?
Well, actually, we have an entry for Google for a number of meanings before the computer sense, of course. You remember Barney Google with his googly eyes, and the Google could be the windpipe. So the word itself was in use before it became associated with a particular company. In terms of trademarked items becoming generic, I don't know what the earliest one was, of course, but there are common things like thermos and Band-Aid and Kleenex and Xerox. And companies are in an odd position there because they want their products to be so well known that people assume that that's the only one of its kind. But they don't want it to become generic so that other people, other companies then could also use it. So for dictionaries, we try to be careful if we show that a trademarked term has become generic to quote the instances of its use in a generic way. But most dictionaries try to indicate that they do know that originally it was a trademark. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of a balancing game there.
I remember from a marketing class that I took a long time ago as an undergraduate, one of the professors talking about Coca-Cola and how Coke was the term for a cola drink. You said, just give me a Coke. And people knew instantly you wanted a cola drink. And Pepsi-Cola spent millions on an ad campaign that always ended with, say Pepsi, please. They wanted people to say Pepsi when they were ordering and not just say Coke. So the tagline was always, say Pepsi, please.
Yeah, I remember that. But it's interesting that in the South, the genericization of Coca-Cola or Coke has gone even further so that you can say, would you like a Coke? And the person says yes, and then you say, well, what kind? An orange, a Mountain Dew, a Pepsi? So it's any kind of soft drink.
Oh, my goodness. Mark in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hello. The word I'm interested in is forenoon. It's a word that my grandparents used all the time. It meant, you know, roughly the time from 9 in the morning till noon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I never hear it used anymore. It was such a useful word.
Yeah, it is a useful word, and I think you're right that it is a little bit old-fashioned. We do have an entry for it, and our latest quotation is from the Dare evidence itself in 1965 and 70, but I'm sure it would have been heard somewhat later than that. It's hard to know why terms simply go out of fashion. I suppose it was probably more important in agricultural communities where you organized your day mm-hmm. by the morning before you came in for a big meal. Maybe as we became more concentrated in working offices and schools, it was less important. I don't know, but it does seem to be old-fashioned.
Yeah, it does. Thank you for calling. Rebecca in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just had a question to ask if you ever heard the word schluck, which means to take a sip. You would take a schluck out of someone's glass. My family is predominantly German, and they use that word all the time. And if you were taking a sip and it went down the wrong pipe, you first schlucked yourself.
Very interesting. It certainly is German in sound, all those sh and schle words.
I have no idea how it
are German. We have lots of things like schlacht and schlepp and schlepper and schnibble and schmoozle and schmutz and schnickelfritz and schaskopf and things like that. But I don't think we have your schluck.
Schluck.
Look, okay, well, thank you.
All right, maybe somebody else has heard that. Oh, wait a minute.
Hold on a minute. There's a
cross-reference. Hold on, Rebecca.
S-H-L. And we'll see whether it means the same thing.
That's amazing.
To swallow or a swallow. Yes, indeed.
There it is.
Our earliest quotation is from 1939 in a Pennsylvania German source, and we have one from 2000 in Milwaukee.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, an amazing use of the book there. Joe in Eau Claire, hi.
Hey, how's it going today?
Great, thank you for calling.
Good to hear. I moved from Wisconsin to Montana, and I noticed three really neat kind of differences. All of these are kind of questionable behaviors. But the first one being in Wisconsin, if you grab onto a bumper of a moving car in the snow, we would call that snurfing. And in Montana, they called that hooky bobbin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
another one in Wisconsin, if you go to a restaurant and eat your dinner and then leave without paying, that would be called dine and ditch. And in Montana, they called it hog and jog.
Hog and jog.
And the third one that I have a question on, in Wisconsin, if you're out in your truck in the snow and spinning circles, we'd call that doing donuts. And out west, they call it spinning Brodies.
Yeah, that's right. We have Brodies for that.
I've always wondered, where does Brody come from, or who's this Brody guy that is always spinning in his truck?
Actually, I think it was in reference to a real person, and if you'll hold on a minute, I'll see if I can find it. But the hooky bobbing one is interesting because there's quite a variety of terms, regional terms, for that particular activity, which all of our parents would, of course, tell us not to do. And let's see. Some of the others are bum riding and, let's see. Oh, I can't remember the others. Snurfing is a good one. Can't
Wheelies.
Remember the others, but let's see if we can find Brody. Yes, it was after Steve Brody, who claimed to have jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge in 1886. So it's a 360-degree turn made by skidding or an uncontrolled vehicle. And so a half Brody is a 180-degree turn.
And it's named after a Brody who's claimed to have jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, as far as we know.
Dave in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Dave.
Yes, my wife comes from the Green Bay area of Wisconsin, and heavily German. And they don't, when they visit someone, they don't say they're going to their home; they say they're going by their home.
Yes.
I was wondering if that's a translation from German.
Yes, you're exactly right. So it's not the American English pronoun or preposition, the by, but it's the German bei, and it just translates very nicely for German heritage speakers, but it seems a little unusual for people who don't have that background.
Well, they're not, you know, these people that I deal with in that area are second or third generation.
Yes.
But they still use that, you know.
Right.
Sure that most of them couldn't speak a word of German, but you know, they still use that expression.
Yeah, and we've found it to be heavily located in Wisconsin, particularly southeastern Wisconsin.
There you
go. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Thank you for calling. And Steve in Sun Prairie, hi to you.
Hey, good morning. I've been waiting for years for DARE to come out, and I dare say, as a retiree now, it's a little too expensive for me to buy the volumes in print. But I have heard that it's coming out in some sort of a computerized disc form. Is that correct?
When it comes out in its digital version next year, it will be an online edition that we will regularly update. But what that means is that most people will have access to it through public libraries or university libraries. There may also be a static version of the electronic edition, which would not be updated, but we don't know yet for sure how it will be offered.
Okay. So it would be something then that would have to be accessed by going to a library.
Or if you have a library card with your local library, probably you have electronic access to their materials anyway. So you wouldn't have to physically go there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Don in Warren, Illinois. Let's see. We got Don there. Hi, Don.
Hi. A penny for a spool of thread, a penny for a needle. That's the way the money goes. Pop goes the weasel. A weasel is a leather bag, long, thin, like a weasel skin, that has a like jaws at the top, usually brass, and they can put change and folding money down in there and snap it. I have grandpa's. So that is a very old term.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, and yeah, and that for if you were just tuning in, that goes back to Don's talking about a call that came quite earlier in the show when we were talking about
a weasel sock.
A weasel sock as a purse. There you go. Thanks, Don.
That's great.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. All right, another mystery solved. Pat in East Troy. Hello.
Hi, Larry. I'm very old, and I had an English teacher in seventh grade about 1938, and she was very straight-laced and put up with no foolishness, but she introduced me to the word super gobsloptious, and the contrast between her normal personality and that word has always afflicted my sensibilities.
Super, what was it again?
Super gobsloptious.
Super gobsloptious.
Gobsloptious. I think actually we have something for gobsloptious, yes.
Oh,
we do. Actually, we have a cross-reference to goluptious. So this is one of those words that is kind of fanciful and has lots of variations. But your teacher was taking it one step further by making it super gobsloptious.
Ah!
It gave indication of a hidden personality.
Ah.
And goluptious goes back in the Oxford to at least 1856, where it means excellent, delightful, or delicious.
Well, it sounds that. You know, it sounds, that's, if I had not known, just had the word and some, and you said, what does that mean? That's probably about what I would have said.
Well, you have a good interior monologue with your dictionary.
Well, you have to be sure and wipe your chin after you say it.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye.
Bye. Appreciate it. And Francine, who's on the road. Hi, Francine.
Hi, Larry. I'm enjoying the lexicography here. Anyway, my grandmother always used an expression, if you took a sip of something and choked on it, she said you would use your Sunday throat.
Yes.
I wonder if you've ever heard of that.
Yes, indeed. We do have an entry for it. And
oh,
it's
excellent.
It's pretty widespread. I don't think we put a regional label on it, but it's the kind of entry we'd include because it's part of our folk language. It's something we say of not knowing why we say it, but just because everybody has always said it.
Always said it?
Yeah.
Oh, and that's not what I've heard. Or at least I don't remember hearing it.
Hmm.
But obviously, it's been used a lot because Joan knew right like that that it was in the book.
Well, and actually, I grew up with it. So.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Hmm. Let me see.
Joan's checking it out.
For the info.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yes, our earliest quote for Sunday throat goes back to 1894.
There you go, 1894. Thanks, Francine. Chuck in Bagley, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin, and as kids, when we were talking, we might say we used the phrase "ana," and I just wonder if that was just improper English. I think we kind of meant it to be like "ain't that so," or "do you agree with me?"
Yeah, that's a very common tag question in Milwaukee. And lots of languages have such questions. German has nicht wahr, French has n'est pas, meaning isn't it so, isn't it true? And so Ana comes from ain't it, as in ain't it so, or isn't it so. A little bit further north in the Fox Valley, people often say inso rather than Ana, but it means the same thing. It's just asking for confirmation.
What about, like, up here in the Upper Peninsula, I lived here during my career, and, you know, we use the term, eh? It seems to me it's used in the same context, almost.
Yes, and that's a much more Canadian-associated mm-hmm. term.
Eh?
So, eh? Isn't that so? Yes?
Sure.
Eh?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ainso, I've heard that. That was some friends who were from sort of the Door County, just a little south of Door County, used that term all the time.
Yeah, Ainso and Ainso and Ainso, ain't it and Ana and Haina. Lots of tag questions.
Well, Joan, this is always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And again, what's your site? I'm sure we have your site up on my Facebook page, but give it anyway.
Yes, it's www.dare.wisc.edu. But we also have a site that was put up by UW Communications to celebrate Volume 5,
yeah,
which is dare.news.wisc.edu.
dare.news.wisc.edu. Well, however you want to put it out there, it's a wonderful resource, and thank you so much for talking with us about it.
It's my pleasure.
And we have links on my Facebook page. You can just go to the Larry Mueller Show if you didn't get it. Joan Hall, our guest. I know we'll have her back, and we'll do this again. It's always a lot of fun. And let you know tomorrow, Scott Craven, our wildlife ecologist, is going to stop by to talk about the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.